Welcome all to the UK Monday night All Addictions meeting. Our speaker tonight is Amy B, and she will be talking about the fourth step inventory. Take it away, Amy.
Thank you so much. Hello, everybody. Good evening, good morning, wherever you are in the world. My name is Amy. I'm an alcoholic. It's always really nice to start with a prayer, so I will. I heard someone say it once, so just it's not mine. I'll just repeat it. Let the lips be mine and the words be thine. Just bring it in. Bring God into the picture. I have no idea what will come out of my mouth, but I trust that you will guide me. Thank you very much for letting me be of service tonight. So, I really loved the fourth step, and I was excited that that was the topic and that I didn't have to pick one myself. And it occurred to me that I hadn't really talked about the fourth step for a long time. And over the past couple of weeks and days and hours, it's just been like all my different experiences and different things that people have said and speakers that I've heard. And I realized just how much of like what I think about it, or what I know about the fourth step and I know about inventory is like what's written in this book and what other people have told me matched with my own experience. And there's a lot of detail, a lot of words, a lot of explanation, but like the first thing that I just really wanted to say, which was like the thing that just was really making me laugh in preparing for this, was that when I came in and I started working steps like properly, I was in a lot of pain, and I was on step one, and I just remember going to the BBA website, looking through steps like two and three to try and figure what was going to happen, finding the inventory, printing one out, and then writing it about an ex-boyfriend, and then calling my sponsor and saying, "Okay, I've done the inventory." And she was like, "What are you doing? Like what is wrong with you?" And I was like, "No, I found it. I've got it. Like, I figured it out, because I need to get this out. I need freedom." I mean, I didn't have the words for that. And she was like, "Look, you're here, you're doing this, just trust God, just trust the process, like get over yourself and what you think, many things." But it was like, okay, fine. But even in my third step, I remember things were so tight, I was carrying so much, that it was like by the time we got to page 64 and like the fourth step was on, I was like, bring it, yes, let's do this. And that really hasn't left me, although maybe I'll come back to that in a moment. So I wanted to say a few things about the general picture. I kind of get the feeling that everybody, maybe it's a wrong to presume, but I feel like everybody in the meeting has worked the fourth step. If anyone hasn't, please say now. Ah. Great. Hi, Laura. Okay, fine. I won't be too detailed. Great. Thank you. So I want to talk about some observations that I'd like to share about. Firstly, is like step four, the inventory, like from a spiritual perspective, which of course is at the heart of what we're doing. This is a spiritual program. I have a spiritual malady and I need a spiritual solution in order to thrive, to be reborn. That's what it says in step three. I was reborn. And the run-up to step four, in the step three really sets up step four. And I just wanted to say a few things about that. Just like on page 60, we're told that, there's the ABCs. I'm alcoholic. Drunk or sober, I can't manage my own life. B, probably no human power can relieve my addiction. And C, God can and will if he is sought. And it's followed by the words being convinced on page 60. And then if we fast forward to like the end of inventory and the end of this process, all the way on page 71, it says, "In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you from him. So I just really wanted to like start with that, with like, you know, the convinced and convinced, like the, within these like 11 pages, that that process is happening, lest we forget just like the basis of which, like why we're here. I went to self-help groups. I did like some, you know, landmark forum, and I had some very like dynamic, like some of you are nodding, I love you guys. You know, like, you know, I chose, why'd you choose vanilla? I chose vanilla because it's vanilla. And I'd read the letter about my story about the boyfriend who really hurt me over and over till I was sick of it. But I'm an addict. So even though I've read it loads of times, not really sick of it because I'm still on my own power. Right. But I was very open to like this process, but like it was all coming from like relying on self. The beginning, the space between what I just read about step three. Step three is really setting up for step four, because it's really talking about all the aspects of self that we're really actually going to talk about that comprise the inventory. You know, page 62, you know, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our trouble. They, like, they introduce fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. Again, self-centeredness, and they talk about self-pitying, selfish, dishonest. You know, they're really like throw all these like not even defects, just character at me, and then they give me this like sense that you're gonna have to let this go. You know, they're warning me that I need to do that, but it's like they don't say you're going to write inventory, which is going to take this all away, until they've let me sit in the fact that like this is me on my own power. And it's not until I've kind of like done inventory and done it again and had seen others do it and taken it through them, I've come to like understand just how hard it is to really get to the level of honesty and willingness to talk about myself personally. And to write these things down, like you've really got to recognize that like it's the repetition of like what's being said and the explanation of like what's happened here, that you have gone from whoever you were before, Amy, has like advanced to this person who shows up like this because you need to do this in order to survive. And that when we talk about inventory being like a business, which is page 64, a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. The reason why they can say it like that is because they've given me like the 5 pages prior to really knuckle down to like the sad state of affairs that is my spiritual condition. And it marvels me that like I was in so much pain. It's like that thing, as we grow with the book and we take others through it and you do it again, like the reason why it's like it was enough for me to know at the beginning I was just in pain and I need help. It's quite another thing to see the intricacies of what's being said here, and how wherever I am in my journey, there'll be a version of pain that I'm dealing with now that still comes down to the same root causes that were there at the beginning. And along the way, there's been aspects of me that feel that like it shouldn't be like that. I've got 7 years in a couple of days. But it's less about that, thank God, and more about the fact that this is an ongoing process of getting deeper. And that thing that we say like here is like every time you go through the book, you should ask yourself, can this take me further than I am today, wherever I am? So yeah, my name is Amy and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Like I'm not with this mental obsession that leads me to pick up a drink to like solve my problem, but there's a spiritual malady that's still there, and it will manifest in obsessing against other things, and this inventory is there to help me with that. I pick up anger, I pick up charm, I pick up all these things. It doesn't matter which side of the coin they are, they're all there as a distract, as a placebo. Because I'm still very young in the process of fully trusting and relying that a power greater than myself will solve all my problem. However, that's just me really talking about how much I love this process and I understand it and I'm willing to go with it and not worry about being perfect. And I've like graduated like landmark. But that it's an ongoing process. And inventory, fact-finding and a fact-facing process, which is then bookended, much like convinced on page 70, where it says, we've begun, if you've listed and analyzed your resentments, you've begun to comprehend their futility and fatality. So the fact-finding and the fact-facing is going to take me in a process to like admitting this is futile, like unnecessary, and it's fatal.
10 minutes remaining.
Boom. Great. Which is like a really great deal. But what does that look like, and what did it look like for me? Well, I thought I would just read an inventory, as that would probably be helpful, just to not so much be that kind of, hey, this is what it's about and this is like what you've got to do, but just like what it's like for me to write inventory and how I feel and what it really means and how the process brings me to truth. So I have a feeling this is probably two inventories, but anyway, I want to say that like this thing at the beginning of inventory where we have the prayer at the top and it says, God, please help me see the truth about my resentments. It's like something that I have to lean on and always do and will come back to during when I'm writing inventory. Like, I find that as much as I know that I'm resentful at my uncle, which is the inventory here, okay, I'm resentful at my uncle, and I know why. When I actually come to write it, I marvel at the fact that, like, I can't actually put it into words. It's like I've been going around, like, angry, bitching and moaning, or, like, having it out with him in the shower, you know, discussing it with him for months, years maybe. Right. But when I actually come to write it down, it's like, I can't really explain. I don't know what it is. Or like, I need like a whole book to get it all out. And I just don't think I have enough space. And what will I do? So number one, it's really helpful all the time. I stop a lot and it's like, God, please help me see the truth. And then pause. Like, I've asked you to help me, so I'll pause for the answer. And I'll invariably, like most of the time, it comes. And I'll need to do that at various points when I'm writing. Like, and I think it's great that I can really go to town and really talk about all the things that piss me off. But the idea of this target statement that BBA talks about, where it's like, you just need to take a couple of things that basically sum this up. Like, I'm resentful at my uncle. He didn't invite me to his birthday and he's divided the family. Great. And now it's on. And then we have these seven areas of self. I feel very blessed, but also I don't know, it just made sense to me that the first time I went through steps was with like the BBA way, and I've been lucky enough to listen to people who've gone through it other ways and it wasn't as detailed. And I think that's the thing about BBA, it's so detailed, really going into it, really eking things out, because I need a message of depth and weight if I'm going to do this process. Then I really want to understand what's being said in the book, and I want a process that like meets me there. So when they say in the book, you know, we at the bottom of page 64, we ask ourselves why we're angry. And in most cases, we find out it's our self-esteem, pocketbook, ambitions, personal relationships are hurt and threatened, and security and so on. Like, this version is going to really eke that out. And I think that that's a privilege. I mean, it's a privilege that I get the chance to actually write inventory, and that I'm given this opportunity, like, to actually, you know, get it out and be guided to do that, but also that it's the extent that I'm going to be given a lot of data that's going to tell me about me. And I'm aware that that leads to self-knowledge, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just focusing on the joy I felt when it was like, this is self-esteem, and that means how Amy sees and feels about herself. It's the role in this situation that I've assigned myself. And when it comes to the resentment I have towards my uncle, it's that I am top niece. And what, how you treat others is not how you treat me. I'm aware that it says I'm the best niece. It's all the same thing, but that's like this idea of like voicing it. And of course, what this was really about, like that I have the courage to like talk about it like that, even if I have insecurities, even if I'm broken, even if I'm navigating, you know, a sobriety and whatever addiction that I've been plagued by, is the fact that I've come to this place writing inventory where I am the director they talked about in page 60 to 63, and this is my chance to get it out. And ideally, it's my last chance, so you better make it a good one, right? It's like you're going to go to town. You're going to say, this is the script, this is how it should be, and nobody got it. They didn't know, but I really don't care. All I'm interested in is like dumping it on the page once and for all. So I'm very honest and I allow that person to come out. Obviously, I know that later it might not be the same permission and that's not really where this is going. But when it's on and I'm in it, that's what I'm doing. Self-esteem, I'm the best niece. The fear is I'm not, I'm going to be dropped or I'm treated like everybody else. Pride, how you see and feel about me. You should love me unconditionally and always be there for me. You should never treat me like you treat others. And this idea of like the fear being that I'm treated like everybody else, I'm not special. Ambition, I want him to apologize. I want him to stop being a jerk. Sometimes I've written, I want them to fuck off and die, excuse my language, but that's how I felt. That's all I could say. And that's and it was on the fear. They won't die. What will I do then? They will, but they're not going to do it now. They're not going to fuck off now. I can't control this situation. Excuse my language. Security. What I need to be okay. I need an honest, kind, loving, supportive uncle to be okay. And it's like a fear of being what? Being without an uncle who's going to show up like that. And it takes a lot to like be in that space of writing, like basically your uncle is not the person you thought he was. Are you okay with that? No, I'm terrified. My uncle is not the uncle that I need him to be. Then what is going to happen? Personal relations. Uncles are like parents, but even kinder and super supportive. Fear of being dumped, not a supportive uncle, not a replacement parent. Sex relations, a real woman calls somebody out for being dishonorable. Fear of like not being able to call him out. Anyway, I have to move quickly to get over the page, but there's so much more obviously to say about this. I'm out. It's done. I've said all these things. I feel woozy, but I can see it's a bit nuts. And in the fifth step, I get told that like I get asked all the time across all those questions. There's like my sponsor or the person I'm reading to stopping me at various moments and asking the key questions, the fifth step considerations. Like, is this objectionable, Amy? Like, you know, do you need your uncle to be like this for you to really be okay? And it's like, yeah, no. Okay. And it's like the second consideration, it's like, do you see that on your own power? It's all I'm really asking you. It's not like objectionable and you're a bad girl. And this is, you know, it's more, do you see that on your own power? That's what you expect from your uncle. And do you see that if you cling to that, like there's no God, there's no trust. You're just on your own, needing your uncle to be this way so that everything's fine. Well, we all know that even if he was that way, it wouldn't be fine because I'd find something else to have a problem with. And that is underpinned by the turning over the page. And turning the page, no matter which inventory it is, there's always a moment where I'm like, oh, God, this is so annoying. Because I get asked, have you things that you resented in column two, the things you said your uncle has done, have you divided the family? How are you not invited someone to the party? And it's like, oh, well, sort of, yes, no, yes. I have my version. And there are other things I wrote here in the course about my uncle, and I've done them too. Okay. I said he was controlling and hurtful and selfish and self-centered. And I've been like that too. And often there's a moment where I've cried. That part within me that's just devastated that this can be. Like, that's how powerful the realization was. And I get this moment where the process is showing me, as underpinned by the step that the prayer that follows. God, this is a sick person like me. It doesn't say like me in the book, but we say it in BBA to make that connection. Do you see that we are all the same? That part of this triangle where it's like service, the spirit, and that you've got to see you are at one. We are all fallible. None of us are perfect. We're all doing the best we can, and sometimes we fall short. How can I be helpful to them? Don't want to be. God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. Okay. All right. Great. You're cool with that? Can you handle that? Can we move forward? Yes. And then it's this thing of like, did I realize that it was never to do with him and more what this experience that God has given me by him acting this way that I can learn and look to just me? Like to actually just look at where I was to blame and like how I keep this alive. Like, what do I get up to carry this on? And I hadn't thought about that before. Like most of us haven't. Or maybe I did, but I was powerless to stop it. I recognize that there's such a deep fear of having a terrible uncle who doesn't behave in a way that makes me feel okay, loved, supported, and cared about, that it will set up these lies that I tell myself that this is supposed to be any different. He needs to be any different, that I'm different. And if I can handle this right, at some point I'll say the right thing and he'll stop doing all his little games that hurt me and other people in the family. That my attitude is like, I'm not part of this problem. I'm just collateral damage. I can get away with pretending not to do anything. I can just bitch and moan. They're my actions. I'll gossip about him. Or when I talk to him, I pretend that I don't think this way. And that, you know, it's great that he's shunned half the family and it's fine. I don't have the courage to talk to him. And I realize at the end that it's like, the harm is that I'm not honest with him because I'm terrified that if I tell him that he's hurting me, or if I ask him why he does the thing, why didn't you invite me to your party? I have no, like, I'm so scared to ask him because I don't want to hear the answer that he doesn't love me or he doesn't care or he's moved on or all these things. You know, I stay in the fear because, like, I depend on him being a certain way for me to be okay. There's no God in that. And across every resentment, every sex inventory, every inventory where I've written about fear, which are obviously parts I haven't got time to talk about, but they all are taken from this data to paint a picture of somebody who, on their own power, without a faith, or a faith, like a willingness to trust and rely and to take things to God or to take actions rooted in a trust and a belief that God will be there for me. I will stay in a space of having the same conversation with myself about these people, resenting, you know, most of you will know, resentment, refeeling, replaying the story over and over, thinking that I'm the one that by just doing that, by being angry, can somehow change the outcome. This is a spiritual program and it requires a spiritual act in order for me to move to. For God to remove it, there has to be a recognition that I play a role in my own misery. And it comes through recognizing that the misery is like held together by what it says towards the end of the chapter. Well, actually, two parts. Firstly is recognition of what self-reliance is, which is talked about on page 68 when it talks about fear, and that this smashing this idea that just because I'm confident, it actually works against me, because walking around telling people, you know, this happened and therefore my life is like this, the idea of like something happened, you know, but it's past, but you're the one who's holding on to it, Amy, and thinking that that's the way to deal with life because I don't feel there's any other way to do it. Recognizing that when I look back and realize that people who wronged me were perhaps spiritually sick as a spiritual moment, because until then they're just an asshole. And suddenly this process is softening me to realize that like people are spiritually sick and they don't necessarily know what they're doing, and that we are all part of a process where it can be difficult to be honest about the behavior that we do, or to recognize that there are people who don't have a solution that is rooted in the kind of power that this process is giving me.
That's 20.
Thank you. And I think that that's like, there's so much more to say. I don't really want to continue more, but I obviously didn't come to the end. But that thing around like, so I'll say this, that we have begun to learn patience, tolerance, and goodwill towards all men, even our enemies, but we look on them as sick people and we're willing to straighten out the past if we can. I don't always get the outcome that I'm looking for, but in my experience, the four-step inventory has freed me from the expectation or the need for that to happen in the first place. Thank you.